Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
Welcome back to the Group Answers Podcast Show. I'm Brian Daniel with Chris Surrett.
What's up?
Hey, man, we're steaming towards, I don't know where we are on the order of things because we're kind of skipping around here this spring, but we are steaming towards the 100th episode. I was wondering if you had heard back from the caterers.
Yeah, this is actually episode 99, so it'll be the next one, and the caterers are coming, and we do have a surprise guest.
What about the band?
Couldn't get the band.
Was it Eddie or Alex that couldn't make it?
Yeah. It was kind of the both of them. basically, I got the text back that said, "Who is this? How'd you get my number?"
Well,
which funny enough is what I get from Kevin Queen, who's in the room as well. When I text him, it's like, "How'd you get this?"
Good a time as any to introduce today's subjects. Yeah, let's say.
Yeah, I'm very excited about this. We planned this several months ago, and this is really cool. We've got a couple guys in the room that I admire greatly. One of them is actually my pastor, Kevin Queen. I'm so excited to have my pastor in the room. And Kevin, well, we'll talk about you in just a minute, but we also have Dave Clayton. Known Dave for several years. He's a pastor here in the Nashville area at Ethos Church. Dave, welcome. Kevin, welcome.
Thank you.
Great to be here,
man. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit. I was going to read a bio. I've got bios here, but I'd rather hear it from you guys anyway. So we'll start with you, Kevin. Obviously, you are the pastor of Crosspoint Church. Just give us real quick a brief, how'd you get there? Why are you there? You know, what's the deal?
Yes. It's a crazy story. So grew up in Gwinnett County, Georgia, northeast of Atlanta, and working at a church there, 12 Stone Church. I've been on staff as a campus pastor and a teaching pastor for 14 years. Thought we'd be there for a long, long time. And God just kind of picked us up first. He kind of began to press into when I was in prayer that I'd been praying that Crosspoint would find a pastor because I had a sister-in-law that lived in the city and she didn't have a church. And he kind of flipped it on me. And I felt like God was saying, I want you to go do that. And I said, no. Not going to do that. And so we kind of wrestled with it for about a month and a half. And then I finally told my wife, I think this is what God's asked us to do. And just to make a long story short, out of nowhere, I got a text that Crosspoint wanted to talk about being the pastor there. And so, I think it was one of those things where God had to kind of tell me in secret first before I'd really like believe it, like because nobody'd ever talked to me ever about being a lead pastor anywhere, yeah. and so he worked in a lot of ways to get us up here. But I've got a family we have four kids, and it's a big move for us to leave all of our family in about an 8-mile radius, about 18 cousins the kids have, but to head north on 75, and as we've been here for 18 months, and it's been incredible. And we've been getting through the first year, you know, as a family, just really, I think, starting to flourish as a family. But we saw God move quickly, kind of in the church, and to be able to see what he's doing with just the stories and friendships God's given us in town has just been a real gift. And the people we've been able to meet in the church, like the conversations we've had, get to hear stories about what God's doing, just fires me up. It really is. It's been an amazing journey.
So, yeah. Kevin, you were a lifelong Georgian, right?
I mean, my entire life. Yeah. 40 years in Georgia, yeah.
So when you say big move, I mean, that's the first time that you guys had moved out of that area. I mean, other than, I assume, college and stuff like that.
Even in college, we were at the University of Georgia. So it's all we'd ever known. And
that's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, we're happy to have you. We're very happy to have you.
So what's winter like? I mean, when you had to experience winter here for the first time.
Yeah, we have winter every morning in Tennessee. Like the most free is 32 degrees, and right now I got on a tank top underneath, just ready for the afternoon.
Because Atlanta's got like two seasons. Yeah. When we lived down there, it was like it's summer and mud. It seems like that's what I remember.
A lot of rain, but yeah.
Yeah, I ride a Harley for fun, and every morning I think I'm going to ride the Harley to work. And then I step outside. It's like, no, I'm not writing that.
And then you make a better decision.
Make a much better decision. Yes, yes. Just being in kind of a backseat at CrossPoint, I was on staff there for 6 years and then an attender now, just to see the wave of what God is doing. And it's not just you, Kevin, obviously, but just the revival and the everything that's just happening at CrossPoint is just fun to watch and fun to be a part of. So, yeah it's been cool. Dave, known about you for a long time. You're friends with my brother and then start hearing just what Ethos was doing in town. But tell us a little bit just what's going on. I mean, you planted the church, right, several years ago?
Yeah. You know, my wife Sydney and I, about 10 years ago, just felt this call to plant a church. And we didn't even really know what church planting was. And so we just had a few friends and family members kind of in our small circle who didn't know Jesus, weren't interested in Jesus, but they loved and trusted us. And we thought, man, how do we leverage that relationship for the sake of something bigger? And so we started 10 years ago bivocationally thinking, you know, we'll lead a small little church plant and serve them and love them and see what God does. And God had, you know, other plans, other stories, but it's been really fun. So, you know, we're in this now 10 years and we have three little boys that are like in it with us. And And, you know, there are people, you know, not just our family, but, you know, our church, man, we love those people. Mm-hmm. And it is so much fun to get to be on mission together. I was just at lunch with a friend and I hadn't seen him in a while and he's kind of asking about the ministry. And I said, I think this is literally the most fun I've ever had in ministry.
That's cool.
And I'm, you know, 16 years into full-time ministry, you know, 10 with Ethos, but yeah, it's been great. So getting to make disciples and help plant churches and serve our people as they're trying to become more like Jesus. And in this time, in this city, has been really fun. So
that's awesome. I remember visiting Ethos right after I stepped off staff at CrossPoint and walking in and feeling like we were the oldest people in the building. I mean, it was just amazing how young the church was. I mean, we felt like we were grandparents, you know, walking in. So you guys have really just kind of hit that young market, I guess, is what you would say. I mean,
and not even on purpose. You know, we kind of laugh. We forget how young our church is until we go serve in other churches, and then we're like, "Whoa!" Because we're a young church.
I always thought that CrossPoint was young, and then I went to Ethos and was like, it's incredible.
Yeah, we'll probably get into it, but I was at I went to a concert over at Cannery Row, which is not a really big venue. It's very intimate. All the ballrooms over there, and saw your signs everywhere.
Yeah.
That's where you guys meet, right? And have you been there the entire time?
Yeah, we've been there the whole time. We have a week-to-week lease on all of our campuses, which is so much fun.
And that's a blast.
This is a church of thousands.
Yeah. And I mean, it's crazy. And yet, just the favor of God, you know, these guys, they let us, we've had office spaces in there. We have kids spaces. We keep our signs up throughout the week. Mm. I mean, it's amazing.
Wow.
It's a fun adventure.
Tell us about Global.
About what?
I'm sorry, Onward.
Yeah, so Onward is our church planting, disciple-making hub that we have within the church and then beyond the church. And so, you know, we'll bring residents in a lot of times 12 to 18 to 24 months at a time, and they'll come in. Uh-oh. And we'll just really pour into them and then send them back out to start churches, to start ministry. So we've been doing that for a couple of years. And so I kind of serve in multiple roles, you know, kind of lead church planter. I lead Onward. I lead this thing called Awaken with a group of people as well. It kind of comes out of what we're doing. And the way that I see myself is less of just a church pastor and more of a kind of like a church multiplication officer, you know, like how do I multiply, you know, what we're doing over and over and over and over, starting with the small into the macro. So Onward's the mechanism or the hub by which we do that.
That's cool. One of the reasons we wanted you guys to be a part of this, because our audience is group leaders and group pastors and a lot of church staff. You know, we talk a lot about community and being in community. And it seems like one of the areas where especially church staff doesn't see community are lead pastors. You know, I see pastors all the time that will talk about people being in community and small groups, and unfortunately, they're not in community themselves. And I think we see some damage that really comes from that. So the question I want to ask you guys is, why is pastoring particularly such a lonely world. I mean, you stand up, both of you guys stand up in front of thousands every weekend. You're surrounded by people. And, you know, I see it in my family as well, but it tends to be a lonely world. Why is that?
You know, the kind of quote that comes to mind was a Keller quote, and where he said, you know, we all want to be known and loved. He said to be known and not loved is our greatest fear, but to be loved and not known is superficial. He said, but when we're known and loved, he said, that's a lot like what God does. And I think we desire that, but being a pastor, oftentimes you're known, you're telling you're telling intimate details of your life, you're telling your stories and sharing about your family, and so you feel known, but there are even other things, deeper places that a lot of times we wonder, well, if I shared that, would I truly be loved? You know, and if I shared the stories that don't make it on the platform, if somebody knew things about me that I can't share on a platform, would I really be loved then? And would I lose influence? And so I think a lot of times there's a sense of loneliness that goes, who can I tell those things to? Who can I reveal those struggles to? Because most times, even if somebody's in your small group, they're under your leadership. And if there's even the people on staff, there's just a different relationship there. And sometimes you need those places. You have that in your family, but it's hard to find outside of that. And so I think there's a loneliness, and I think there's another aspect of being a pastor where I think we're often ghosted, you know, in our past. We can look back, and I just don't know of other professions where you can help somebody be there when their children are born. You can, you know, be with them in the moments of crisis and cancer, and go through those aspects of life. And whether it's just, you know, transitional in life, or whether it's, you know, maybe there was an issue at the church, somebody just leaves, and sometimes you see them at Kroger and you're like, I haven't seen you in about 3 years, you know, and it's that awkward, and it's a nature of it. But I think that does leave wounds on the heart sometimes in relationships. And I think that if that happens enough in our past, I think sometimes we can kind of put up like a mechanism, I'm going to be more guarded. Mm-hmm. But when the scripture says guard your heart, I don't think that's what it's talking about, you know. Yeah. It's the wellspring of life, but it's guard and keep like impurities away, not guard from loving and having those relationships and taking risk in relationship again. But I think we have enough of those experiences in our past. We have to attend to those to be able to open up and have relationship again. So
yeah, I think that's so true. I planted a church several years ago, and people leaving I think it hurt my family. As much as or more than it did me, because we would have these relationships. And my brother always says, sheep bite. And, it gets painful after a while. What about you, Dave? Have you felt that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the gravitational pull in leadership is almost always towards isolation. Especially in our culture, where our culture loves to put people up on pedestals and then cheer as they fall. I mean, that's just kind of across our culture. And so I think the natural, if we're not intentional, everything will pull us towards isolation. Mm-hmm. You know, the pain of those past experiences, the demands of people, the internal stuff that you're, you know, constantly wrestling with as a leader. And so I think, you know, for me, recognizing that is where everything is pulling, I go, man, how much harder do I have to fight against that current? Yeah. So if, you know, an average person sitting in my church has to fight against a current of isolation, I might have to fight twice as hard. Mm-hmm. Because there's this perception of, because I'm up front and people hear the stories, oh, I know you, you know. And so sometimes there's this perception that something's there that's not. And so, you know, my wife and I have thought, hey, as we sit in this position, we have to decide, are we going to sit up here and build fans, you know, or are we going to build a family? Mm-hmm. And if we're going to have a family, it's going to require us to put ourselves in a position where getting hurt is a part of it. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. we can't minimize the potential for, you know, friction there. But the other side of that is you get, man, so much joy, you know, so much life. And so I think I see that with my friends that are pastors. I see those own tendencies in me. Anytime something hurts or anytime something gets hard, to want to pull back, so I just have to fight. You almost have to fight your natural instincts in those moments, because the natural instincts say, "Protect,
I think
the kingdom instinct says, you know, no, get more vulnerable.
Yeah, right? Lean into it.
Yeah, and so it's hard to do.
Yeah. One of the greatest predictors of a disciple's spiritual growth is regular Bible reading. That's why Lifeway created the Daily Discipleship Guide. This new resource in the Bible Studies for Life family contains content for a weekly group Bible study, but it also includes 5 daily devotions to reinforce what was learned in the group meeting. And that daily commitment to reading God's Word helps create a habit that leads to discipleship. To download 4 free sessions of the Daily Discipleship Guide, visit BibleStudiesForLife.com/DDG. That's BibleStudiesForLife.com/DDG.
I get it. And I think a lot of people, I'm not surprised to hear that from 2 pastors. I've never heard it quite put that way before. I do think in terms of community and group life, that would be something that is, I think everyone would agree, is not limited to pastors. I think a lot of people, that gravitational pull towards isolation, I think in terms of men, I think that's really true. Mm. When we talk about like man caves and downtime, that's usually what we're talking about is being isolated for whatever reason. So I would be interested knowing, so you guys have articulated very well the response to that. How do you fight through it? I think we would all agree that community is important, maybe even more so in your role. And so even with that, and Kevin, as you said, with those, I think you couched it in terms of wounds on the heart, even with that, you know, those things demand something of you to get past them. Mm-hmm. What have you guys discovered are those ways that you can punch through? Because I think a lot of people would be interested in hearing what you've learned, group leaders, to just keep in mind with their own group, because I think we all are going to have walls. I think you guys and in your roles are going to maybe be more aware and be able to name those more effectively than maybe someone that's in and out of group life, like on a weekly level, because you're always in that context.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. Dave's been in the city for a long time, and I kind of just moved to town. So maybe having a little different experience there. But I think when you move to a new city, you kind of feel like the new kid in the lunchroom, and you're looking around and going, okay, where am I going to sit? And, you know, is there going to be a place for me? So when you're new to a city or new to a job or maybe new to a gym even, it's just kind of looking around and going, man, looking with eyes of possibility. Like when I know that I need relationships, but like where are those? And then, I mean, you can kind of tell. And maybe some of it's personality. Like since I was a kid, when I walk around, I'm like, man, the world is full of friends I just haven't met yet. You know, so part of it's just maybe naivety. I don't know. But it's like, but I think I probably look at the world that way. And because of that, maybe have some more wounds in some places. Yeah. But then also, I think I've maybe made some great friendships. So and coming new to town, started meeting people and knowing I need relationships out. I mean, there's incredible staff and just wonderful people in the church, but just realizing I also need some friends outside of that. And it took me about a year to realize I really, really need deep friendships, because I could look back at the place where I used to live and go, I got great friendships. I can call them anytime. I can FaceTime them, but there's just something about face-to-face that our souls need. And so I think first is just to acknowledge the need. And then second, once I realized I need it, I began to pray for it. And what we're praying for is what we're looking for, and what we're looking for, we tend to find. Mm. You know. And so like even just the acknowledgement, dependence on God, and God's got an incredible, you know, network. Yeah. And so sometimes when we just ask him and we begin to look, we see how he's maybe even already positioned those kind of future friends that he would have for us already in our lives. So that's kind of my journey here. But Dave's been in the city for a long time.
How do you fight through that gravitational pull, Dave?
Yeah, you know, I kind of see it on 2 sides, at least with, you know, first I have to be able to see my own heart. I have to be aware of my own heart. And I think especially for guys, but in leadership, when life gets busy, I'm amazed at how easy it is to just be totally disconnected from my own heart. Like, what's going on? What are the idols? What are the dreams? What are the struggles? What are the fears? And so I think part of, and you know, isolation, I believe, is one of the enemy's primary tactics. I mean, it's like the first move in his, he discourages us and then he gets us alone and then he does what he wants. And so, you know, I think for me going, how do I get into solitude, which is different than isolation? Because solitude, you're not alone, you're alone with God,
yeah,
right? And so I get alone with God to stay in touch, kind of that Psalm 139, like, help me see my heart. What's going on in the heart? But then for me, in regards to fighting against that gravitational pull, it's now that I've seen what's in the heart, who do I share this with?
Yeah.
And And I've got to share it with trusted people, but I also have to share it with people that I'm learning to trust. And I think that's how I fight against that gravitational pull. Like, what does it look like to be, you know, as a pastor or as a leader? I'm in process. I know that, you know. And so I cannot be the, you know, the expert. I'm just trying to be the best follower in the room. You know, right. I want to be the chief follower of Jesus, you know, not the best leader. And so a lot of that is going, okay, Lord, will you help me see what's going on? And then who do I need to share this with? And and that happens like this between pastors. It happens with friends in the church. It happens on our staff. It happens in front of the church, you know. And so trying to wrestle with that tension of, you know, how vulnerable can we be without freaking everybody out? And that's the tension, you know.
That's so true.
Sometimes we've really missed that mark, you know, as our church would tell you. Like, there's been some seasons, but that's how we try to fight it.
So I think that's interesting because when I talk to churches and small group pastors about their pastor, about them being in community and being in a small group, I always kind of counsel them that it doesn't necessarily need to be or even should be with people in their church. Because, like you said, how far do I go before I start freaking people out? And if they go to your church, I mean, I've experienced this. I've led groups and been the pastor of the church. And there's just some places you can't go. Mm-hmm. You just can't. You want to be vulnerable. You want to be open. So I, you know, I always counsel if you can find outside of the church, which it feels like that's what you guys have found kind of in each other is, you know, Kevin, you've talked about you can call Dave on a Sunday afternoon. And why is it so hard for church leaders to be able to find community with other church leaders? I mean, it seems like, you know, especially with church, you know, large churches, they don't want to, you know, kind of mess with the other. So how have you guys kind of fought through that?
Hmm. I think God kind of set me up for my friendship with Dave by being a campus pastor. I was at a church where there were 9 campuses. And so I was being a campus pastor and then stepping into the lead pastor role. I've really tried to look at the city as one church with many locations. Mm. Yeah, a lot of different churches, right? I think God was doing multi-site long before we were.
Yeah.
And so when I think about the relationships that I have with those other campus pastors, man, we were on mission together. Mm. And I think that was training for coming into Nashville, because I look at Dave and I look at these other pastors and the relationships we have. I'm like, man, we're in this together. Mm-hmm. And so I think that framework helped with that. But I think also Dave's openness to go, man, I'm going to open up and have one more friend. You know, with all that's going on and all that he's leading in the city and all that he's leading at the church, he was willing to open up a seat at the lunchroom table, right? It's like, hey, you could sit here.
The new kid.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, really?
he didn't realize that I was not the cool kid. He's like, oh, a table. And now he's like, man, I hate that I'm at this table.
But I'm locked in, man. I'm committed to the table.
I'm locked in at least till summer. I mean,
I've been to those pastor luncheons.
That's right.
You're sitting at that table, guy. I was supposed to be over there.
So funny.
So Dave, what does it mean for you to have other pastors to lean on, to call, to talk to? I mean, is that where your main community comes from? Or are you able to build community within your church for you personally?
Yeah, it's both. I mean, I completely understand what you're saying. You know, there are spaces and questions and things that only another lead pastor understands.
You can't say, I'm about to fire that worship leader.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. You know, it's just, so there's things that you just need somebody else that sits in your seat, that carries your responsibility, that you understand. So to me, it's a both and. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I recognize we've got a really beautiful and kind of unique thing happening on our team, like in our local church. You know, we go on vacation together and we love each other. And I mean, we're really, really close. And yet at the same time, like when I look at what's happening in the city and even beyond our city, everybody sees what's happening on the faith, you know, spectrum, and they go, we're shrinking, you know, the culture's winning. And I think sometimes as pastors, we see that and we go, uh-oh, our share of the market is shrinking. So now we're competitors. We're, you know, there are more of us fighting for smaller. And I go, it's the exact opposite of that. Our opportunity is increasing. Mm. And he's not my competitor. You know, he's my brother. Like, we're on the same. It's like we need each other for the mission that Jesus has given us. Mm-hmm. And I think about with my own boys, nothing frustrates my father heart in me more than watching my boys, you know, like compete over something when I just want them to enjoy it together. Mm-hmm. And so anytime I see that, as a father, I'm frustrated. But the moment they begin to share and collaborate and enjoy each other. Like, my father heart is so drawn to them. Like, that's where I want to be. And I'm convinced that, you know, God, as he sees us, I mean, he's made us for each other. This mission is so much more fun together. Mm-hmm. It's so much more fun. And it's okay that Kevin is stealing all the people from our church. You know, it's okay. We'll get over it.
I think you guys are doing fine. Yeah.
That's what you say because you go to his church. And he's your pastor. No.
Let me share something fun. I'm going to interrupt.
Okay.
But we were at an elder meeting, and I was telling the elders about just the gift of this relationship. Yeah. And I was like, it's like God is really just, I feel like this is a gift. And I said, you know what? Out of our friendship, I said, if somebody was to tell me that they were no longer going to Cross Point and they were going to Ethos, like, I would be happy for them that Dave is their pastor. I was like, I don't know that I've experienced that to this depth. Mm. Like, that's a touch of God. Mm. You know what I mean? And at that moment, there was one of our elders got a text from somebody that asked him, and he's one of the pastors, and that asked him, would he baptize them at one of the Cross Point locations? And he said, have you been going to Cross Point? Haven't seen it? They said, no, I'm going to Ethos. Like, at that moment, that person's going to Ethos asked if they could be baptized. And it was like, God was saying, do you really, like, it's like a pop quiz. It's like, God, do you really feel that way?
Can we count that baptism?
That's right, you can. Yeah, but I think, you know, I think that's the heart really behind the relationship. I think the more we've been open to that, the more God has blessed that.
It's been so cool because the other night we were having dinner with some of our friends and from church, from Ethos, and we're asking about, man, what have you seen God doing in this season? Like, what's been the most impactful thing that you've seen God do in this season? Just this open-ended question. And one of the ladies at our table, I didn't know what she was going to say. She said one of the most impactful things in this last season was, is like 5 or 6 weeks ago. She said, I'm sitting at church and I look over and I see Kevin Queen sitting in one of the worship services. Hmm. And one of my friends looks over and says, hey, that's the pastor of Cross Point, and he's here, and I wonder what he's doing here. And she said, oh, yeah, he and Dave are friends. And she said their friend group was going, I can't believe they're actually friends. It's not a stunt. Like, like they're actually, you know. And it was shocking to me. I said, I cannot believe that's the most impactful thing that you've seen is two pastors actually being friends.
Being
I'm like,
friends.
Forgive us. Forgive us that, you know, that's so – but. Yeah. Wow. But it's just been such a gift from God, and to see that even when your son got baptized this weekend, our staff saw it on Instagram, and they're all texting each other. Mm. Like, I'm on this group thread, and it's like, Kevin's son got baptized, and it was amazing.
That's awesome.
So cool.
So we've had do either of you know Malachi O'Brien? Does that name ring a bell? He's a prayer specialist. We've had him on the show. It's been the past year. But anyway, I wanted to see if you guys – Dave, I think Awaken is something you're familiar with, and Kevin, probably you as well. So this recent 30-day experience in Nashville, Awaken, it's a fasting and prayer experience. Tell us about that. I think that's something that groups might be able to deploy, just at least in methodology, but it'd be good to hear your thoughts on it and how it's going.
Yeah, so one of the things that God put in our heart, and this is one of the things that drew our friendship together. So I say our, like, you know, Kevin and I, was just this longing to see God do something in the city that only God could take credit for. And going, man, that's what we want to see God do. And you look back throughout Christian history, and so often before there's a true disciple-making or true church planting movement, before that is a unified effort to pray and fast together. And so that's something our church has been leaning into for several years, and Kevin and I had such a like-heartedness in that. And so one of the things that we sense God inviting us into is how do we bring churches together in the city to pray and fast together on behalf of every person that lives in the city of Nashville by name. And so for 30 days, you know, we had more than 418 churches that set aside 30 days to pray and fast. Every person prayed and fasted over 15 unique names. Mm. And man, it was incredible what God was doing in the season. But what I really believe is seasons of prayer and fasting, those are never the harvest seasons. Those are the seasons for planting. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to be 8, 9, 10, 12 months from now, we're going to look back and go, look at what God has done. So we could tell you lots of stories, but it's been incredible to see the church come together and say, hey, God, would you do what only you could do. And so we've had people. So it just really kind of started out when we first started. I think you were with your church leaders, and they said, I wonder if we could find a third church to do it as well. Because, you know, we knew our churches were going to do this together. And I wonder if a third church could do it. And we just had no idea how many people were going to just kind of say, hey, we'll do this. It's been really, really cool.
Ended up over 300 churches, right?
Over 400.
400?
Yeah, yeah. It just kept growing. So it was wild. And now we've had people from literally hundreds of cities all across the U.S. reach out and say, we want to do this. How do we do this? Can we do this? What's that look like? And so we're trying to get our head around how do we even begin to serve that broader conversation? Because what we tried to do was take this really big task and just make it as simple as possible so that everybody could take a next step. And
that's so cool. I remember going to the website the first time because, Kevin, you told me about it even before you kind of announced it. And I went to the website, and there was no branding on it. I mean, there was no way to tell it was even Ethos Church behind it. And I played the video, and I was like, that's Dave. Mm-hmm. So they must have something to do with it. But I just love the heart of saying, this is not us. This is not our church. This is a citywide thing. And that's how it felt going through it. So it was amazing.
That's cool.
And I want to ask you, Kevin, because you're a student of revivals. I mean, I've sat in your office, and you've given me a professional lecture on—
Whether you wanted one or not. Oh, yeah.
it was great. It was awesome. But I'd love to hear kind of your perspective coming through the awakening, which feels a little bit like a start of a revival. What's it going to take now? You've done it 30 days. What's it going to take for a true citywide revival to happen in Nashville?
That's a great question. You know, I think each move of God— throughout history has just like each miracle that Jesus did was distinctive. It was never kind of a carbon copy, but we do see these principles that run throughout. But it was interesting. I got a text from a guy who said, you know, when church, some people say that revival will happen when churches get together and they fast and pray. He said, but I think we miss it. This is what the guy said. I think we miss it because when churches get together and fast and pray, revival has already begun. Like, that's a mark of revival, that the churches would come together. Mm. So we pray for revival. I think we continue to pray and continue to seek God in. But sometimes I wonder if, like, you remember when they were praying that Peter would be set free from prison? Remember they were praying, and then there was, like, a knock at the door, and the servant girl opens, like, she looks out, and she sees— it's Peter. She runs back in. She goes, Peter's here.
Doesn't even open the door.
Right? And I wonder sometimes, like, we're praying for revival, and I wonder sometimes if what we're praying for is not at the door. Mm. And so I think it's happening in pockets, and I think it's happening in people.
I'm going to steal
it's happening
that. That's really good.
That's really good. Working on my next book.
Right? I think it's happening. I think, but it's having eyes to see where God is, where God's moving, and then fanning that flame of what's already happening. And then at some point it reaches a fever pitch, and then the match strikes. And Dave and I have a joke. We're like, man, when the fire falls, it's a double call. We call each other all the time, but we're like, the moment we get that double call, like that means that in what we see in history, there comes a moment where it just breaks out. Mm. And we don't know when that moment will be. And God is sovereign in that. But I think it's already happening in pockets. Mm-hmm. But we're saying, okay, when the bonfire erupts, like, double call me, man. And I will pick up. So, yeah.
That's awesome. All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up here. But thanks, Dave and Kevin, for joining us and making your way to our little podcast studio. Really appreciate your time. And we want to talk about another podcast that's on our sister network. We're part of the Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network. You want to shout that one out, Brian?
Well, Chris, Kevin, Dave, have any of you listened to Rainer on Leadership with Tom Rainer and Jonathan Howe recently?
Who's Tom Rainer?
Well, he used to work here.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot.
As a part of the Lifeway Podcast Network family, they've recently covered relevant topics like 7 habits of highly effective preachers, 8 church fights that are fading, and 4 thoughts on ordination. Just look up Rainer on Leadership on your favorite podcast app and subscribe today. And speaking of subscribing, we would encourage you to get out to wherever you listen to group answers and rate us. And we'd love a comment. We actually read those. And react, right, Chris? We have.
We do.
Yeah. We have put that into practice.
Sometimes it's anger. Sometimes it's isolation.
Never anger. It's never anger. It's always in the best of spirit, right?
It is.
Always.
It is.
Thanks for being with us for this episode. We look forward to everyone being with us for the big 100 coming up. We're still working on Van Halen. If we can't get those, then we'll find some of the guys down in Lifeway Music.
Quite right.
Quite right. Right. We'll see you next time.